Welcome once again to No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, Bob Page here in the beautiful, that's kind of with quotation marks, but it's the very adequate Red Shovel Network studios.
Now you tell me as we tape this program on Thursday, here in the beautiful, I thought you were going to say Detroit metro area where you guys happen to be. Did it snow this morning?
Yes, it did snow. Yes, just a light dusting.
Unbelievable.
Well, it was 70 the other day, but yes.
It's going to be 55 today, so this is what we take.
I don't go out of my house here in West Palm Beach unless it's at least 70. I'm not going outside.
Well, that shows the type of man you are. I said to my wife, I sent her a picture. She's in Florida, too, and I go, as the Bible says, this too shall pass.
Yes, it shall.
Rather quickly. Anyway, we are here in the Red Shovel.
That's the first time I've ever heard Eli Zarrett in 55 years quote the Bible. Now, being of the Jewish persuasion, are you quoting the First Testament, the New Testament, or the Old Testament?
I've heard him say a lot of things about God.
I am Bible ignorant, and I don't really follow any religious tenets.
Okay? That's always good for the show.
Neither Islam, Judaism, nor Christianity. But I respect all of them.
How about the Holy Rollers in Chicago? Remember
them? No, I don't.
Oh, man.
Anyway, we're going to talk shortly with Greg Kelser, who went to school, obviously, was kind of mentor of Magic Johnson, to get his thoughts on that. Get his thoughts on the Michigan and Michigan State guys who may or may not opt for the pros, and also the Pistons snuck in to the playoffs last night. We'll talk about that. But, you know, the Masters started today, and, of course, until Sunday, you don't really know what's going to happen, but it's always fun to watch. And last year, I went on Sunday against my better instincts for the first time.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Because
he got a free ticket and a free trip down. Why do you think?
I wanted to do it once. I wanted to see all the restrictions. I wanted to see just what a bad experience it could be. And the reason I say that is because golf, the game, I love the sport, and nothing televises better than golf on TV. I can stand there in front of my 75-inch Sony big screen right behind Rory McIlroy. They're going to hit a shot. Whereas when you go to the golf course, at the best you can see is 1/36 of the course. You're either going to see him tee off, which is worth nothing. You can sit at the green and watch him putt. Or if you sit in the middle of the fairway, you don't see where the ball lands.
That's because you've never gone to a golf tournament like that.
Yes, I have.
No, nothing like that, though. That's a majestic event.
Yeah. Once I saw the majesty and walked the course, I'd had enough. I was now ready to go to downtown Augusta, which, by the way, is one of the seediest, sleaziest little towns.
It really is. It's nothing but gas stations and fast food hamburger places.
They've tried to get rid of the strip joints. They've gotten rid of four of the six strip joints. They have to wait for the other two owners to die before they can rescind their liquor license. And no self-respecting man would go to a strip club that doesn't serve booze.
You guys ever been down to the TPC at Ponte Vedra Beach?
No, yes, sir, I have.
That's my bucket list.
I played on it the first week it opened.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Even the Country Club of Detroit in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, the surrounding area is beautiful. It's amazing, you know, but not Augusta.
Now, so the other thing about it is they make sure when you go to Augusta that you really can't see anything. There's no monitors. There's no cameras. In fact, you can't even give somebody your ticket within 900 yards of the thing. And last year they had an extra rule. You couldn't scream dilly dilly after a shot or you'd be ejected from the course, because back then the Budweiser spot was on everybody's mind, dilly dilly.
So Roger Maltby, who's a terrific golf commentator, gets permanently kicked off the broadcast because he referred to the patrons as a crowd or something.
You see
Nance toe the lines of the patrons. They had that old boy, what the hell is that redneck's name? Billy Bob or whatever. He didn't lock nothing. He didn't lock nothing down there in Augusta that wasn't first class all the way. And that's why he put in them draconian. That's a big word, draconian.
Listen, they jumped over the fence this year. The ladies played this year, the amateurs.
Oh, yeah.
And that was quite an event. And contrary to what people think, they drew a lot of people, too, over the weekend to watch the girls play. They had a good crowd. The Sunday crowd was terrific. I think 25, 26,000 people.
Well, it's a beautiful golf course. And
me explain something. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in Augusta. I used to own a radio station. In fact, the radio station that I owned was the one owned by James Brown. I feel good. And I can only tell you the golf course has got nothing to do with Augusta. It is separate and distinct from the city of Augusta. They don't talk about the two like they're in the same place. They have no idea what is going on beyond the hedges.
It's this beautiful, incredible,
unbelievable.
In the middle of rural nothingness.
Right. Royal nothing. That's exactly right.
If and Billy Bob were still there, y'all ain't never getting into that golf course.
I played it a number.
Because you said that, you ain't welcome no more.
To this, I played it a number of times. And the first time I was invited, was after we had bought the radio station, the fathers of the city invited me to come and play. And one of the fathers of the city was a member, so we all went out there. There were like 12 or 14 of us. Only the four of us were playing. Even on a day when there's nobody out there, they only let you play a foursome. You can't play 5, 6, 10 guys at a time.
Well, you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, you should. If there's nobody else out there, why not?
Keep going.
We go out there, and we're waiting for the maintenance guy to come out there to do something with a chain of some kind to let us on a certain part. And I got to go to the bathroom in the worst way. So I go over to the maintenance guy, and I said, listen, can
would
I get
be
in?
Number one or number two?
Okay.
So I go over to the maintenance guy.
Please let him get through the story, please.
And I said, hey, Bubba. I said, hey, Bubba. That was the first thing I made a mistake with. I called him Bubba. And she says, my name's not Bubba. It's Robert. I said, I'm sorry, Robert. But can I use your bathroom in your maintenance shop? No. Nobody is allowed in the maintenance shop. I said, I got to go. I said, I can't get in the front. It's all locked down. He says, nope, do what you need to do, he says, but do not go in that maintenance shop. I said, well, I can't. It's locked up. So I wandered around the first tee for a few minutes, and I said, to hell with this. So I pulled out my whistle.
This is going to be why Denny McClain has been banned
from
Augusta.
Did you have to say pulled out?
I pulled out my whistle, and I whizzed. I whizzed on the first tee. And nothing was.
You pissed on the guys, course.
And by the way,
that's
the guys
it,
that
pal.
Were.
That's it. Never again are you going to see that course.
So I went behind part of the hedges.
Dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly. Dilly dilly. And I went behind the hedges, as they say.
Okay.
And I relieved myself. Now I come back out, and he says, boy, if anybody finds out about that, you'll never come on this golf course again. I said, what did you want me to do, go in my pants? I said, that's not becoming at all. So make a long story short, I wound up playing that golf course probably another 15 or 20 times. Had a great time every time we played it.
Did they come out on a golf cart get you on the
But Eli's got the wrong idea for – let me finish. But Eli's got the wrong idea of why you go to see the Masters. It's an event. You get there as early as you can. You find a hole that you're going to be on with a lot of action, a lot of problems, and you sit there for the day. You don't wander
in
around
other words,
the golf course.
In other words, you don't see the tournament. You see one hole and half of one hole.
You pick the right hole, number 11, 12, 13, 14. Those are the holes.
You both are right. But what Denny is saying, that's what you do on Thursday or Friday. You don't do it on Sunday.
Or the practice.
Eli and I covered a lot of big-time PGA Tour events
over
the
different. This is the Masters.
Denny, stop. If you want to see the tournament, you don't go.
We cover the PGA Tour events. We cover from the press tent. Everybody does. The top golf writers in America were sitting in the press tent watching it so we can see the tournament.
Otherwise,
you guys don't cover it every week like they do.
Denny, I saw
there's a big difference. And you know, they're kind of – it's another golf tournament to these guys. To you guys, especially you, it was an event. It was an event in your life.
And if I did it again,
you wouldn't
I would go to a practice round or the first day where it didn't matter. But when I wanted to see who won the tournament, it was a thrilling finish with Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth. You just can't see. There's no monitors. You have no idea what's going on.
And by the way, the restrictions are just as dramatic during the practice rounds as they are during the tournament. So you wouldn't have gained anything by being there for a practice round.
My major point, before everybody just jumped all over this, was that it's the best sport to see on TV with the possible exception of football, and the worst to see live.
If golf is a sport, who then are the athletes?
That's ridiculous. We're not going to get into that.
But there are some great athletes out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Dustin Johnson, great athlete. Bruce Kep,
what sport does he play? Dustin Johnson.
Okay,
how about McElroy? I mean, he was a hell of a soccer player during his life already, and a great golfer.
Anyway, Tiger is one of the top choices. I don't think he can win.
14-1.
Yeah, I don't think he can win.
Rory's the favorite. 7-1.
All right. Anyway, the Pistons last night sneak into the playoffs. It's so weird, the NBA. It's such an insincere playoff system where you got 60, half the teams make it in, and all the attention goes to the seventh, eighth, and ninth spots the last week of the season for the teams that are going to get the privilege of being eviscerated by the number one seed. And the Pistons, unfortunately, had to play Blake Griffin down the stretch. He's got nothing left. He's got a bad knee.
He might not be able to play in the
playoffs. Well, problem. No, the coach said he's going to play. This morning they were talking about it. He is going to play.
He has to give it a try.
See how good he is.
Yeah, but they're up against Giannis.
Let me ask you a question. Does it make a difference? Does it make a difference if he plays? Will they get through the first round?
No.
Is there any chance?
No. I would think the over-under is will they win one game. And I think they can win one game because Milwaukee could just mail it in for game three or four here in Detroit. And that would
Drummond is playing like a bitch.
He's
man.
Playing
He's
great.
Playing out of his head.
Yeah. Without Blake, though.
And Kennard had what? Kennard had 27 points last night or something, right?
Yeah, playing against the
But my question is, why don't these guys have 27 points every time they play?
Because they're
he's a bench
great.
Player. Sometimes he gets the minutes, sometimes he doesn't. And he's a jump shooter. Sometimes he's on, sometimes he's off.
So wouldn't the coach know if he got more minutes, he'd score more points?
Maybe.
Okay.
Sure. They,
I guess
look,
we'll
those
have to
guys are conducting practices every day. They see every Detroit Pistons game. The coaches know who's good, who's hot, who's capable, who's not. So you have to trust the coaches on player personnel stuff because they're there and they see everything.
Well, especially that game.
Now, number one, a major story came as a shock, apparently, to everybody, including LeBron James, is Magic Johnson stepping down as president of basketball operations. I'm watching, reading the story, trying to understand it. Dan Le Batard on ESPN, it was the first thing I saw. Here's what he said. From the floor of the Staples Center, he goes, Magic basically lazy, uncommitted, didn't want to work hard enough to do with what the position demanded. He was comfortable being the business of Magic Johnson, having too much fun, great style and charisma, but didn't want to get his hands dirty for someone of his stature to be dealing with anymore. So
I agree.
And so it seems pretty obvious. I mean, Magic's had an incredible basketball career with owning 100 Starbucks and the movie
theater.
I read
his quotes, you guys, and, you know, one of the questions that I personally am asked by people all the time is why did I retire in my 50s from broadcasting, essentially, until you dragged me kicking and screaming out of retirement because I got tired of the BSers. I got tired of the backstabbers. You read Irvin Johnson's quotes about why he stepped down. He said, I'm sick and tired of the backstabbing. He wanted to send just a text, a congratulation text to Russell Westbrook, and he said, I can't do that because somebody's going to try to knife me in the back. They're going to say I'm tampering with Westbrook. He got tired of the BS and the
politics.
Hey,
Bob, isn't it about time when you are in a position like that, ownership, big-time star, big-time college player, isn't it time that he steps up and takes some leadership position with the ball club?
Or don't. Yes, either do it or don't.
Yeah, and now he don't. Now he doesn't. But the bottom line is, why hasn't he stepped up the last couple of years? He's been there 2 years. And what has he done? Nothing.
He decided that he couldn't charm his way through it, realized that. You know, he was hired because he's a celebrity, and legitimately so. Listen, I don't want to get political. We have a celebrity president who wouldn't have been president if he wasn't a celebrity. Yep. And Magic wouldn't have gotten that job if he wasn't a great Laker and a celebrity. And I give him credit for eventually saying, he didn't say I'm not willing to pay the price. He used the other reasons, but apparently he wasn't willing to pay the price because it is a dirty job. The president flies with the team. Actually, the general manager was to do that, and I guess he clashed with Rob Pelinka also, the ex-Wolverine who's the
And, you know, why would he want this? On the other hand, why would he want the job, for God's sakes? Number one, at one time he owned 105 Starbucks. He owns 5% of the Lakers. He put $50 million into the Dodgers. He owned a chain of Burger Kings. He owned a chain of movie theaters.
Wait a second.
Can I say something? Why do you got to interrupt me all the time?
You're asking why, Kelser, would he tell you why?
No, I'm not asking Kelser. I'm asking anybody.
Go ahead. Ask the question.
Got an answer.
Ask the question.
Why would he want the aggravation? If this is the way he put it, that everybody's backstabbing. Listen, that's not the first time anybody's backstabbed on the Lakers.
I agree. He should have known. Nobody knows basketball better than Magic Johnson. He should have known what the job was, and if he wasn't willing to do it, probably shouldn't have taken it. And I guess he realized he wasn't willing to pay the price. But none of this should have come as a surprise. All right. Greg Kelser is on the line with us. Greg, of course, was a junior when Magic stepped upon the floor at the Jennison Fieldhouse years ago. They are still very good friends. And Greg, welcome, first of all, and give us your thoughts on Magic stepping down. Did it surprise you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
That first question threw him.
He flew in late from New York last night. I'm sure he's just waking up. And we're already five cups of coffee into this day. So go ahead.
I got in bed at 4:30, 5 o'clock this morning. But I'm okay. We're fine. I was surprised. I think everyone was. We knew that things weren't going quite the way maybe he had mapped it out for the Lakers. But the fact that he let it go so abruptly and in the manner in which he did, that probably was more shocking, and there was no warning of it. We didn't see it coming. So when you factor all of that in, yeah, it was surprising. But I think there have been a lot of speculation going on. He's given his statements on what led up to it, and then there's been a lot of people who have chimed in to try to delve further into why. But I think probably the most plausible reason is that it just didn't work out from probably the initial thinking of it. When he signed that deal to take over that team as president, I thought it was for the purpose of his presence, of his stature, his face, his history with the organization. But I also thought that he would have a team of people working alongside and underneath that would do the day-to-day grind. I never expected him to do what most people in that position would be called to do. But if you're going to do that, then you got to have the most loyal, hardline supporters and protectors of you in place so that it can run seamlessly as if you were there every single day.
Greg, this is Denny McClain. Let me interrupt you for a second. What was he required to do? I mean, you talked about he was...
Be there every day. Be there. Be present.
You don't think he was?
Be in the office. No, he wasn't.
Really?
No, he was not.
Gregory, why did he want that job to begin with?
Probably because he really felt like he could parlay his touch, his success, his fame into turning that organization around. I mean, Irvin is a competitor now, and he made the Lakers a perennial championship team as a player. What crowning achievement would be better than to come back and resurrect this once huge dynasty, bring them back to the prominence that he took them to as a player, now as an executive? That right there was completely alluring, I'm sure. And, of course, his relationship with the Buss family, yeah. With Jeannie Buss. He probably felt like, hey, I can do this, but I want to do it my way. Well, it turned out he couldn't do it his way, not comfortably.
And he had a great relationship with Mr. Buss. But were the players in awe of him? I mean, he was a legend in more ways than one.
I wonder about that because many of the players now, Irvin's been retired 23 years now.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good amount of separation. I don't know if players are in awe of him. They're certainly aware of him. But players today, I don't know that their appreciation and grasp of history,
I agree,
is like ours, the way we saw people when we were growing up, and then if we ever got a chance to meet them, how we would be in awe. I still long to meet someone like Henry Aaron, you know, who was a Willie Mays, two people I grew up watching play and admiring. I've never met him. I remember how giddy I was when I met Muhammad Ali, who was one of my childhood sports heroes, or Bill Russell. So... But I don't know if you get that from a lot of the youngsters today. I don't really think it's the same.
Because I'll just give you a personal experience. When I first joined the Tigers, the first hour I was in Tiger Stadium, I sat between Rocky Colavito and Al Kaline.
Mm.
I mean, it was the most awe-inspiring thing I've ever had in my life. I'm sitting, my God, I've got both their baseball cards and my bicycle at home. What am I doing here?
You know, it's interesting. They were 20-14 after beating Golden State, and then LeBron got hurt, and everything fell apart. It's possible... History, of course, won't say that hadn't he gotten hurt, had he played all season, he might have lifted them the way he did the Cavaliers all those years. They might have made the playoffs, and it wouldn't have been this abject failure of what it looked like. But, again, I guess it's because he didn't anticipate maybe how involved he would be, how involved he wanted to be, and also how bad things would turn out.
You know, that's a good comment, Eli, and I want to ask Greg the same thing Eli's talking about. How involved was LeBron James? Was he really, really into it? Obviously he played very well this year at times, but was he really into it?
I think LeBron was into it, and I think he was trying to eventually play the same role that he played in Cleveland. He was like a coach GM there, and certainly was a coach on the floor and the unquestioned leader, and he had success doing that. He got the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were a lottery team 3 years, 4 years in a row while he was in Miami. He comes back to Cleveland, and all of a sudden they're in the finals 4 years in a row, yep, and won one. So I think he felt like if he could do it in Cleveland, he could probably do similar in Los Angeles, though it would be a little bit tougher in the Western Conference. But had he not injured himself, I believe it was on Christmas Day against the Warriors, and then had that injury turn into the lengthiest one of his career, and the team did falter in his absence. Had he stayed healthy, they would have made the playoffs now.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have been in the top four with home court advantage in the first round, but they would definitely be in.
Was LeBron well-liked by the other players, do you know?
Players like LeBron, I don't know if well-liked is even possible, because he's going to drive you hard, and he's going to do everything he can to push you as close as you possibly can to the level that he plays and the way he approaches basketball, which is it's everything. So, you know, like LeBron, like Kobe, I don't know that Kobe was well-liked, but maybe more importantly than being well-liked, you have to be well-respected, and I think that probably was more the accurate way of assessing it.
Let's move on to a couple other topics. Who do you like to win the playoffs? Who do you think the best team in the league is?
I still think Golden State is the team to beat. I think they're going to probably win it again.
Milwaukee.
They had a chance to not get out of the opening round. I mean, they're playing Chris Paul and company. The Clippers are a pretty good club here.
They'll get out.
And the way Golden State played this year, they didn't win 60 games. All the controversy involving Durant, Draymond and Durant even got into it at one point. Man, you don't want to be here. Just waiting to go to New York as a free agent, whatever. I don't know, Greg. I don't know about this.
That is not an unusual thing when you're talking about a team that has won 3 out of 4 championships. They're just trying to get through. I mean, do you really expect these guys to continually get up for the regular season and win 60 and close to 70
games?
When they were first coming on the scene, 70 wins was exciting. They did it did it 2 years in a row. Now, that's not the thing. This is now their time, and this is when it'll all come together. They still have the three best. They still have three of the game's greatest shooters all time on one team.
But only one basketball for them to play with. You need two basketballs for those guys.
They've got a track record. They figured that out.
Yeah. Hey, you follow the Big Ten, obviously, work it. So you got Brezdakis and Jordan Poole, who already declared they're going to at least check out the draft. And you assume Cassius Winston and perhaps Nick Ward. Who of the guys on Michigan and Michigan State do you think will make it in the pros, and who might be the best pro?
I do think that Brezdakis is a pretty doggone good player. Really confident, even borderline cocky, which isn't a bad thing. He's athletic.
Greg, you mean a freshman blowing kisses to crowds after a dunk? You think he's cocky? Really? Really?
Yeah.
But is he ready?
He's got that swagger. But let me tell you, Cassius Winston's interesting. I know he doesn't jump off the page in terms of his athleticism and such, but he does jump off the page in terms of his effectiveness and leadership ability. I think he can play in the NBA. There's a lot of people who question that. But I do think it has to be with the right team. You're not going to put him on just any one of the 30 teams and it works out. He's got to go to the right team, right situation, be surrounded by the right players, and I think he can be an effective pro. His career could line up like Eric Snow's did. And if you remember Eric Snow coming out of Michigan State, and I talked to George Karl about 2 weeks ago about this very thing, and he told me, he reminded me that Eric Snow could flat-out guard. But also, when he had Eric Snow in Seattle playing behind Gary Payton, I think he also had maybe Ray Allen on that club or something like that. But he said there was no time no playing time available, but that he worked his butt off in practice. He learned from the veterans, and eventually when his time came, he was ready. And Eric went on to have a 10, 12-year successful NBA career. I think the same thing could happen with Cassius. You think of Sherman Douglas. There have been people like Cassius to have
a guy named John Stockton was not the most athletic point guard who ever played in the NBA, for sure.
Exactly.
Greg, do you think Cassius is going to come back to Michigan State? You think he should?
I have not heard anything suggesting that he will come out, but it wouldn't be a bad idea for him to at least explore the terrain. You can do all of that and go back. You can put your name in and take it back out. Now. It's not like it used to be.
And Izzo's pushing him and Ward. He's all over the papers this morning about they should go out and test the water. So
he does.
I would imagine he would.
And he doesn't have to come out in the hardship draft the way Magic did 40 years ago. We were talking about that.
Yeah.
Amazing how the whole personality of the game has changed. What was normal then that would not be normal now, that you have to prove, you have to make a living in order to let you go. Anyway, lastly, Tom Izzo, you want to comment on his blow-up at Aaron Henry, his apparent contrition about that, and his legacy at this point?
Well, what Tom Izzo, what he did in the games with Aaron Henry is something that I don't think any athlete would like to have happen to him in public, certainly not on television.
Right.
But you got to know Tom, and it's within the confines of his team and his team structure and the way he coaches. The players understand it. They know he cares deeply for them, and will do whatever he can to help them.
Greg, with all due respect, I mean, when you spank your child at home once in a while, lo and behold, we love our children. I mean, but sometimes discipline sets in. I mean, it doesn't mean you have permission to grab a guy or go after a guy.
I agree with that. I can promise you this, though. Tom is the type of coach, though, that if he does that, he's going to go back and he'll fix it later. Yeah, I guarantee you, he spoke with Aaron. And they got it taken care of.
Good.
Now the guy I played for, Judd Heathcote, would not have fixed it.
Really?
He'd leave you out there and you fix it yourself, or maybe you lean on your teammates to get it fixed. Tom will come back and he'll beat you down, but he'll bring you back up too. He's good at that. It's unfortunate that it happened in the manner in which it did, because it painted really an unfair characterization of Tom Izzo and who he really is. He is not Bobby Knight. He is not Woody Hayes.
Ooh, boy.
He's not any of those guys.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Gregory, thank you. Good luck in the playoffs.
Greg. Good to hear from you, buddy. Long time.
Thank you all. I listen, too. I listen to your shows.
God bless you.
I enjoy them. You guys do a really good job. And, Eli, I don't know if you know this. Denny, I don't know if you know this, but my man Bob Page over there, he's the one who made the call to help me get, one of my early broadcasting opportunities. And now here, 32, 33 years later, I'm still at it. Thanks, Bob.
My pleasure, because I've always loved you, and I did put some calls in to get you started. And, Greg, don't forget, I'm also the first person who ever put Irvin Johnson on television or radio. This is how old I am.
You know, if we ever take the word I out of your vocabulary, you'd be
speechless. That's right.
God almighty. I did this. I helped God go through the walk on the water.
And I will say this.
Thanks, Greg.
Of all the human beings in my life, you put them all together, for my wife, my kids, and all my friends, I have traveled more air miles with Greg Kelser than everybody else in my life combined. 6 years, 40 road games a year, sitting with this daddy long legs that I couldn't hardly get over.
I'll tell you, I'm not pursuing that one.
Greg, thanks. We'll talk to you later. All right.
All right,
thanks,
guys.
Greg. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Hey, I got one more thing about the Pistons. I don't know if you saw the Detroit Free Press on Thursday morning. Big headline article in the Free Press. And this is what it says, and I quote, "How to get Pistons playoff tickets for games at Little Caesars Arena."
Oh, my
goodness. You know the
old
minor league baseball story, struggling minor league team? Guy calls up the box office and says, "Hey, what time's the game start today?" Box office guy says, "I don't know. What time can you make it?" That's how you get playoff tickets to see the Pistons games at LCA. What time can you make it?
Oh, man. Hey, a little letter. By the way, the number to reach us is 760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS, or ask nofilter@gmail.com.
And one other thing, my eyes are getting bad.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna get that in a second.
Do you know any place he can go, Eli? If Denny's eyes are getting bad, do you know any place he can go?
I may have an idea. In fact, I know you need new glasses. I know you could probably use new multifocal lenses.
Yes, I could.
So you can see, because you've probably got cataracts at your age. Anyway, all you got to do is call 1-800-398-EYES, 1-800-398-EYES, and go to the best eye surgeon in Michigan. Actually, the most experienced in Michigan, Dr. Yaldo, has done over 30,000 LASIK procedures. His CAT system is the most advanced in the world. He's the only one in Southeast Michigan with it. And these multifocal lens implants that I got in 2017 is incredible technology, where I had cataracts, I had problems with distance and up close, and it's all perfect.
Wouldn't it be great to have a 30-game winner, for God's sakes, go out there and talk about how he can see again?
Well,
a 31-game winner.
31-game winner. Thank you.
He put it as a category. Anyway, he's helped 50,000 metro area people get 20/20 or better vision. This CATS LASIK, and also the multifocal lens implants.
Does he listen to the show?
No.
I didn't think so either.
Yeah, there was all done.
50,000 of them. He's got time.
He's too busy making money thanks to Eli's advertisements.
In fact, about 10 years ago, I said to him, "Would you like a couple of tickets to see the Beach Boys?" And he looked at me and said, Who are the Beach Boys?
I know. It's unbelievable. All right, fellas. Now, if you're done with Dr. Yaldo, this is the point of every program where I demand a little equal time.
Go ahead.
Last night, the Columbus Blue Jackets, who staggered into the playoffs in the eighth position, facing the odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They go into Tampa. They're almost immediately trailing 3-0. They trail 3-1 going into the third period, and they come back and they beat the Lightning in Tampa? Mm. We all thought Toronto Maple Leafs, who opened tonight in what should be a great series against Boston, we all thought at the beginning of the year Toronto Maple Leafs were just a shoo-in. No.
Can I ask a question about Tampa? Does Tampa draw well in the hockey world?
I don't know.
The baseball team draws nobody. But what about the hockey? Do they draw?
That's a good question. And they have made big improvements, and they are drawing well in Columbus.
I'm not talking about Columbus.
Major league time. There's Ohio. It's not a major league town. You got obviously Ohio State.
No. And then, Columbus is different. I mean, that's up here in the Midwest. We have a lot of hockey.
Oh, you mean Tampa?
I'm talking about Tampa. Do they draw?
Yes, they draw well for the same reason the Florida Panthers do, but they have their own following too, because so many Northerners, transplanted Northerners. You want to see the Detroit Red Wings. You want to see the Flyers. You want to see the Leafs, Montreal.
Yeah.
Those are a lot of people who go there.
I think Brandon's doing a little research too.
You guys remember Don Chevrier, the late Don Chevrier?
Sure.
Great. Chevy told me, he retired to Tampa before he died of a heart attack, unfortunately, years back, that when the first time they were in the Stanley Cup Finals, every year the TV station in Tampa that does the game has like a Jerry Lewis-type Labor Day telethon. They would not dump the telethon to carry the Tampa Bay Lightning. So the Lightning said, well, then we'll just go to some other station. No other station in Tampa wanted it.
Right.
But that was a long time ago. That was a long time ago. So it's changed.
We're looking up, see what they've been averaging this year in a minute. So we'll let you know.
But anyway, we did get an interesting.
It'd be interesting. Just with one major league club, and they're in first place right now, you know?
Well, also, Tampa. Speaking
That's
of Tampa
the overall
Bay,
record in the league.
Is Yzerman still paid by Tampa Bay?
Yes.
I think he's still paid.
Yes.
And I thought the Kenny Holland quote was kind of interesting in the paper.
What'd he
kind of said, we laugh about it when he's asked whether Yzerman's going to replace him next year. Holland has another year left on his contract, and Yzerman may or may not come here. And I can't see them.
And the Rangers want to talk to Stevie as well. So I don't know what he's going to do. But he lives in Detroit. It makes too much sense.
Do you think Stevie's had a lot to do with the success down there?
Hell yes. Oh, my God.
Built the damn team.
Hell yes. And don't forget the noted attorney, which is what he is, John Cooper, out of Lansing, Michigan, been a tremendous coach. That's been an amazing team for the Tampa Bay Lightning. You look at John Cooper as coach and Stevie Y as manager.
Brandon is raising his hand. You have some stats for us?
Yeah, just a little clarification. So the Tampa Bay Lightning, surprisingly, the sixth best home attendance in the league.
No kidding.
Yeah, and that's
again,
probably because of the record.
Transplanted Northerners.
And that's a little bit over 19,000.
Wow.
Surprisingly, number five just ahead of them, the Detroit Red Wings with 19,120, which I'm not sure if I 100% believe it.
Yeah.
And then the top two are Chicago and Montreal.
Well, I'll give them a suggestion if one of them is listening. They should cross-promote each other and go get each other and promote all day and all night long, trying to get the other into their stadium, vice versa. I mean, geez.
Hey, Brandon, where's Toronto on that list?
Toronto is number four. So the top five are Chicago, Montreal, Philly, Toronto, and Detroit, followed by Tampa
Big
Bay.
Guys.
And then just for reference, because it's fun, the worst five are Ottawa, Carolina, Arizona, Florida, and in 31st place, the New York Islanders with a measly 12,400 average attendance.
Who was that?
The Islanders.
Oh my God. The Islanders, only 12,000?
They've been playing in Brooklyn. They had some games out at the Coliseum this year, but they're moving into a new facility.
Oh.
That's a team, the New York Islanders, they had in that amazing dynasty, those amazing dynasties, Stanley Cup winning teams. They would have split for who knows where they would have gone years and years ago, someplace in Canada that doesn't have an NHL franchise. But they're keeping them there because of the Islanders' great tradition.
Yeah.
And they've been a good club the last couple of years. They're playing Pittsburgh Penguins in the opening round of the playoffs, and the Islanders beat the Penguins at home, but they beat the Penguins Wednesday night. So the Islanders are a good club.
You know, people that aren't in our business may not know what we know about the different attitudes certain athletes in sports have. And hockey guys, I saw from the beginning, seem to be the most decent, regular, down-to-earth of all the athletes.
I agree.
And as you mentioned, the Nassau Coliseum and the Islanders, when I was in New York, the Islanders played the Flyers in some playoff series.
Except when they're drinking beer.
In 80, well, that's usually it's long after they leave the ballpark, the stadium. So anyway, I'm in Philadelphia, and the Islanders have played the Flyers, and I'm doing a live shot on Channel 7, and unfortunately, the game ended early, and the Islanders are going to the bus to go back, and they have lost the game. They're going back to New York. And Brian Trotche, who was Steve Yzerman's hero, was going to the bus. I said, Brian, can you please help me? I got a live shot in 5 minutes. I got to have a guest. Is there anything you can do? He held up the team bus and did a couple of minutes with me on the air. And I can't think of any athlete in any sport. I've only been there a short while. It was one of the most decent things that's ever been done with me. For me as a reporter. So I think
me working with you for 8 or 9 years was decent, too.
Speaking of working together, we get this letter on the 76089 ball, or maybe it's the at Gmail. Anyway, his name is Andy. He's 32 years old. He says, yes, we millennials listen and appreciate the stories and banter. So I thought we were kind of an older audience. He goes, I appreciate the time you take away from your lives to do these podcasts.
My Isn't goodness. That nice?
He goes, it's refreshing to hear.
Oh, yeah? What life is that? I'm retired in Florida.
It's a refreshing to hear an unfiltered opinion on all these sports topics. However, stop cutting the show short due to a time limit. Why didn't he keep it under an hour?
Thank you, sir.
You guys,
Sarah's the one who's rushing us off the air all the time. I don't understand why. We're not doing the network.
Time out.
He says, let it flow. Let it flow.
Have you got a question out of any of this?
No.
Okay.
No,
I've got
I got a question for the two of you. It was an honor to be able to contact the three of us.
I got a question for the both of you. Ready?
Yep.
Can you identify Nico Goodrum and Jim Hicks?
No, it's John Hicks, first of all. Yes,
not
I can.
Jim.
Yes,
can you identify either guy?
Yes, they both hit homers yesterday
picture,
for the Tigers.
I'm just checking. A little roster check, that's all.
And I guess you're segueing into the Tigers, so I want to talk about the apparent end of Mikey Matuk's career. Tigers on Thursday morning designated him for assignment. Mikey, if you have not noticed, is 0-for-23 this year with 11 strikeouts, and he's been a butcher in the field. So they activated Jacoby Jones, the great light-hitting center fielder. I mean, Mikey seemed like such a good kid. He was a great college player at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, too bad.
But he did everything like a football player. And I don't mean that.
He looked like one, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. He just didn't have good rhythm. He didn't have that. I mean, he didn't have good athleticism. You know what he reminded me of?
Who?
A guy by the name of Brandon Inge. He reminded me of Inge. He could do a certain thing, although Matuk couldn't do much of anything very well.
I got something for one of the great pitchers of all time, and certainly of his time. Do you know anybody named Trevor Rosenthal?
No.
Danny, you don't.
No.
Well, he's a Major League Baseball pitcher, and this year he allowed the first 10 men he faced as a reliever for Washington to get on base.
Oh, that's not
good. Wednesday night, he finally got a guy out. First guy got out all year long. He lowered his ERA in the process to 72.00. And we're looking at Craig Kimbrell, who's sitting out there coming off a 5-1, 2.74 season,
why?
In which he struck out 96 guys in 62 innings.
Why? Is there a problem
he's
with him?
Probably in his early 30s.
He's 30. Exactly 30. Yeah.
But he's 30. He's still in his prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what's going on in baseball.
But the game has changed in one sense. They're starting to give out these little short, lot of money contracts versus trying to go to the 5 and 8 and 10, 12-year contracts. Maybe that's what he's caught himself in. He's demanding a long-term contract.
Now, because the Dodgers apparently offered Bryce Harper $45 million a year, but only for 4 years. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, this story is very interesting. It's the Chris – by the way, the two Chris Davises played against each other last
night. Oh, man, what a story.
Chris Davis, K-H-R-I-S, of Oakland – homered twice and had three hits. He's a slugger, but Baltimore's Chris Davis extended his record hitless streak to 50 at-bats, which is just beyond any.
And the game before, he hit three line drives. I saw all three line drives, and he hit the ball really hard, but they were always near somebody. Yep. I watched him hit. He's got nothing really apparently wrong with him. I mean, you would think that he's only playing with one leg or one arm or something
it's
to
been
go
3 years.
50.
It's fascinating. Hit last year when he hit 168, his WAR was -2.8. That means if you brought up a AAA player, right, an average player, they would have won 2.8 more games. So I'm reading this article about a Nobel-winning economist named Richard Thaler, University of Chicago Business School, and he says the reason they're keeping him is the same reason why you'll buy a $15 dessert, but you're full, you'll eat it anyway because you spent the money. Or you got tickets to a basketball game and it's a blizzard and you go anyway because you bought the tickets. It's called the sunk cost fallacy. It's about behavioral economics. And the point is they'd be better off cutting him, bringing a minor league player up, he says. You'd win 2.8 more games. It'd be the best $500,000 you'd ever spent. And he said, I would congratulate the owner or the general manager willing to admit a mistake and move on. So in other words, to cut. And so the point is this sunk cost fallacy, it's that it makes you feel a little bit better about a purchase that didn't turn out well, but you're better off ignoring the purchase and cutting your losses.
Well, let me add to that story. They are having conversations with him right now about getting him off the team and giving him a payout check. But they don't want to give him $161
million. Well, they own $93 million more. They sold 17 this year. Go ahead, Brandon.
And they offered him $45
million. And
did they really? Yeah. To go away? Yep. Oh, my goodness.
And his money is currently deferred. He is the new Bobby Bonilla. He is going to be paid.
Forever.
Until 2037.
Yep. Hey, wait a minute, son. That's our producer, Brandon McAfee, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
Just one thing. You pop off about Bobby again, buddy, and I will show you the box.
What's the matter? Bonilla. He did pop off about
Bobby
Bonilla.
Said that. He's almost got into a fight with one of the reporters in the locker room after the game. He really got pissed. He says, you give me a shot, I'm going to show you the Bronx. That's where he's from, Bobby. But he's from
the Bronx. My wife,
there are a lot of areas up there that really aren't too nice.
When Sharon heard that this guy was getting, $1 or $2 million the rest of his life, she just thought he was the smartest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you,
it's amazing. They're going to be paying Bobby Bonilla for a long, long time. You know what? We had a promo on Madison Square Garden Network in New York. They just took a clip of something I said on the air about him. So you see the promo, and all you see me is the only thing we know about Bobby Bonilla is that he's a liar. That's what you see me saying on the air. That guy came on my half-hour interview show a couple months later. He was a perfect gentleman. He never, ever criticized me or got all over me about that. I didn't dislike Bobby Bonilla.
Why did you call him a liar?
And he was a good ball player, too.
But
just
why
not
did you,
a great ball.
Why did
call
you
liar?
Call him a liar?
Because he, I can't. It's a long time ago. he said something on the air, which was a lie.
Tell us what it was. This is no filter.
Thing. I don't know. Just think of Bob Arum at the boxing press conference in New York. We got two press conferences in a row, day after day. And the second day, the reporters get up and they're so pissed at Bob Arum. They say, you're lying. You're lying. And Arum says, no, Yesterday I was lying. Today I'm telling
you
the truth.
The truth. This is what I really mean. Anyway, it's just a very, very sad story about Chris Davis. So in other words, he's turned down the Ford.
They're having conversations. Yeah. Whether it sounded like it had made at least an overture, would he be interested?
Well, the Players Association would never
go for it.
That is what they.
But if they're paying him $1 million or two through 2037, that's not killing the ball club. I mean. That kind of cash flow, hell, they can handle that.
The problem the ball club has is if they cut him, they look like idiots.
Yep.
And if they play him, they look like idiots.
Yep.
That's why this economist said, if I were the owner, I would congratulate the general manager willing to admit a mistake and move on. But
do you know what Craig Kimbrell has been asking?
No.
You know what he's been asking? He's age 30, as we mentioned. He wants a six-year contract for something like $300 million or something ridiculous like that.
See, that's too much.
For a relief pitcher who wasn't quite as good last year as he has been. Now, you look at Dallas Keuchel, who's also sitting out there with Houston, think, well, he's not the pitcher he was. He was still 12-11 last year. A lot of guys wouldn't mind having a starting pitcher like that.
Yeah.
He's sitting at home because he's asking a hell of a lot of money.
That's the point you made, Danny.
Some of the owners on a long-term contract, they said, look, Craig Kimbrell would be signed tomorrow.
But you know what else, though?
Do you like to say what the Tigers said? We'll give you 2 years. We'll give you $15 million a year for the next 2 years.
But let me tell you what happened. The longer
he wants it, right? Didn't want it.
But the longer he sits, his concentration is going to start to leak. That's number one. Number two, if he's not in an intense way, an intense environment, be able to pitch against hitters, he is not going to do well when he comes back. He's going to suffer. And so there's all kinds of other things that are going on with him as a player that will not come up to par when he does get a chance, unless he signs pretty soon.
Right.
Because he waits another four, five, six weeks, he's gone.
He's asking 6 years. He wants a six-year contract for $100 million. So that's still, $14 million a year, but it's guaranteed for 6 years.
But it's too far. It's too long. 6 years is too long.
Yes. You know?
If he has a chance to make $10 million a year for 2 years and turns it down, shame on him.
That's exactly right.
I have no sympathy
for
him.
And I would think he could get a 2 or 3 year contract for, probably $30, $40, $50 million at least.
This is an interesting story. Dwayne Wade, a great final season, 37 years old. This is, by the way,
great story.
I always think about how he was picked fifth in 2003. Was it 2003 or four? 2004. I can't remember which one. The same year they got Darko and picked Darko. So the Pistons could have had Dwayne Wade. But now that he's getting out of the game, and I give him a lot of credit, he says he told Rachel Nichols on whatever station's on ESPN. He said, "I'll be in therapy." She said, "What?" He said, "I meant it."
Yeah, he's going to go into therapy.
I told my wife, I said, "I need to do therapy. We need to do that a little bit to help get his life in order." He said, "I need someone to talk to about it. It's a big change. Even though I got a long life to live, other great things I can accomplish and do, it's not this, so it's going to be different." There's a lot of this going on. Kevin Love admitted last year that he fights with depression. So an article in the paper the other day about a Marquette player who said the same thing, and he's helped lead other players into it. It's not so easy being in the major leagues. It's not so easy being 23
years. Also, these guys are hardly towering intellects. They're not going to go take a master's degree at MIT. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I might add a little quick story here. In 1970, when I got suspended, I was sent to a psych for 3 days. I was hospitalized mandatorily by the commissioner's office. Right. If I didn't go, they were going to try to keep me out of the game and sent me to a psych and made me go through all kinds of tests for 3 days. And at the end of the 3 days, the doctor came in and said, "Well, we're pleased to announce that you're not crazy, you're not nuts." And I said, "Well, can I have a letter to that effect?" And
I've remember that headline story in the Detroit News.
And I've got a letter
Denny
to that.
Denny McClain, not nuts.
Not, and you know what? The letter
said,
says that.
What do you mean he's not nuts?
The letter exactly says that I was found to be sane and competent and capable. And here it is. Do you guys have a letter?
No, we don't have a letter.
Well, then I'm going to question your.
I'm living in retirement down here in West Palm Beach, Florida.
You're nuts.
Everything's great.
I'm totally happy. I'm so sick
of
hearing that.
I let Eli Zarrett call me out of retirement.
Oh, stop it!
Shut up,
we're begging.
Shut up,
and
you're begging.
I've proven that I'm nuts.
Exactly,
you were begging.
You were begging.
Bob said, "Do I want to be on the air again?" I don't know.
Eli, please let me on. Please, Eli, let me play.
Anyway, what happened to you is it's a nice story, but very, very different from this. That was forced upon you, and psychiatry, and the test they gave just to see if you weren't.
You don't know anything about it. You're talking to somebody forcing something on me. By the way, Wade had his fifth triple-double of his career yesterday in his last game. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
By the way, I saw a little of that game last night. And the thing about Dwayne Wade is that he can still play basketball.
Yeah, he sure can.
But I'm watching one moment where he drives to the hole. And I used to go to a lot of Miami Heat games when Wade was in his prime. He drove to the hole last night. So I think to myself, I think Zarrett could get to the hole as quickly as Dwayne Wade just did. But he still had a good game. And how come no love for another great, great all-time NBA great,
yep,
who's also retiring? And I think he can still play too, but yes, he was hurt earlier this year, Dirk Nowitzki.
Good player.
Did you see Charles Barkley has a commentary in the back of this week's Sports Illustrated praising Dirk, what an incredible player he was to be that, you know.
And with the same team all these years.
But he said he should leave now. You know, it's very hard. And he said, but he shouldn't come back and play again. It's very hard, I think, and most careers end poorly. So you've got to give credit to Wade and give credit to Nowitzki, who could have come back another year and decided not to, rather than just hanging on.
And he hit his last shot from the top of the circle yesterday for a three-pointer. That's the way you go out.
Yeah, 30 points, something like that. Before we finish with basketball, I don't know if you guys have heard this story yet, but I want to know your initial reaction to it, your gut reaction. Mark D'Antonio, I guess Michigan State hired a bus, and they put at least 20, I think that was number 20 or 30 Michigan State football players the bus.
Yeah.
And they drove to Minneapolis to see Michigan State basketball play in the NCAA tournament, the Final Four. And, of course, they didn't pay for their tickets. I'm sure they got in for free, Michigan State football players. Look, D'Antonio would never do anything illegal like this. But I looked at that story and I thought to myself, is that legal? Is that legal?
They're students.
I don't know. I mean,
but they're students, don't they? I mean, they got
to
get free
tickets. Yeah, but
other
students aren't getting a chartered bus and getting free tickets to go to Minneapolis and see Michigan State basketball.
It's the way Harbaugh can take his players to Europe. I think there are some rules if it's a team event like that. It's the individual
stuff. Look, those guys are so smart. They got all these compliance officers. They're not going to do anything, something like that that's blatantly illegal. But it just jumped out at me. I thought, whoa, is that legal?
Well, it's more of the whole nonsense of what's legal and what's illegal. What we said earlier, you know, when we had Greg on, that in the old days, you had to prove hardship. Think of how societal norms have changed. Now you've got where they're actually trying to figure out ways to pay players. Back then, you had to actually prove, as we said earlier in the show, that you were poor. It's just remarkable how the rich guys that own the game and the coaches control these players. And when I went back and thought about that, and by the way, because Magic was hardship, how it's changed so much and how we are in the cusp of finally figuring out a way to pay players and not own their lives the way they do right now.
Let's talk about another guy having just the worst start of his life, Sale. I mean, this poor guy.
0-3 as we take this show on Thursday.
He's got an ERA of
9.
Mm-hmm. 9.
Well, it's early in the season.
Well, excuse me. Three times in a row he's got whacked. I mean, seriously.
But was he whacked in all those three games, or was he losing 2-1?
Whacked and wild.
I didn't see the box.
Whacked and wild. Yesterday, he threw, I think it was 89 fastballs, and only one person swung at a fastball. 89 of them he threw. Only one guy swung at a fastball.
Well, how do you assess that?
I don't understand that.
Well, they're assessing it by velocity. That's what they're trying to do. Well,
but all I'm saying is this guy's got such an amazing breaking ball. Why would he throw 89 fastballs in a start?
Why is he throwing so many curveballs? Why is he throwing so many sliders? I don't get it. Listen, normally when you're going through a system and a problem like he's having right now, you go back to what got you to the dance, and that's a fastball. He's still got it. You can throw around 90 miles an hour. You're still pretty good, and you can do things to make the ball move.
So
allow him to do that. But for some reason, they're not doing it.
You want to talk about Chris Sale versus the guys who played in your day, with whom you played and against whom you played. I saw a quote a little while ago. They were talking to Yaz, and they wanted to know about
Carl Yastrzemski for you youngsters. Carl Yastrzemski.
Yeah, Carl Yastrzemski.
He hasn't played in 40 years. Go ahead.
And here's his quote about Chris Sale. All I can say is I'm really glad I didn't have to face him when I played.
Well, of course not, because he was left-handed and he was throwing from sidearm, and he was throwing the ball at 95, 100 miles an hour at times. And you know what? Last year, one game, he got up. Every fastball he threw was at least 98 miles an hour. One game, all season long.
So you're not making a presumption that he's lost it. You're just it's early in the season.
There's something mechanically wrong, and nobody's bright enough there to see whatever it is. And I mean, I have no idea. I only saw him throw about 10 pitches. But let me give you one other thing. These analytics are totally out of control. I mean, they tape every mile per hour that roams around the ballpark, for God's sake.
They watch the rotation on every pitch
that
comes out of your hand.
And I just want to show you something, how silly this has gotten. all the balls that were hit off him yesterday, gave up 7 or 8 hits. Alan Hansen, who was a hitter. Now, all these guys I'm going to talk to you about are hitters. He hit a ground ball single. Off his bat, the ball went 89 miles an hour. McKinney, another guy, the ball went 80 miles an hour off of his bat.
What does that mean? Is that fast? Is that slow? I don't even know. Why are you saying those numbers?
My point is the ball that's going off the bat is much slower than the ball he's tossing. I don't know what it relates to. That's my. So why would you use these? What application are they using this for?
Okay.
And McKinney comes back and gets another hit yesterday, a fly ball single, and it flew off the bat, listen to this, at 68 miles an hour.
What does
Makes
that
no
mean?
Sense. How I don't know.
And when you miss one at 0 miles an hour, BFD.
It's overanalyzing. You know, I was totally talking about
that's my
buddy,
point.
Literally
it's
old buddy. He's 90 years old now, Bob Miller, the former University of Detroit
yeah,
baseball
good
coach.
Good guy.
Who pitched in the National League for 9 years. We're talking about this, and I said, so, man, tell me about the four-seam fastball versus the two-seam fastball. He said, I don't know what they're talking about. We grip
well,
it a
that's
certain
not
way.
True.
If you
that's
grip
not
it a
true.
Certain way, the ball rose. If you grip the ball another way, the ball sunk. That's all there is to that.
That's not true. That's not totally true. But most people, even you
Did
little
you call
weasel.
It a four-seam no, fastball?
No,
Did you
my,
call it a
my little weasel friend over here. Even he could take a baseball and make it sink. Of course, his would sink from the lack of velocity.
Yes, exactly.
When he hit 60 feet.
They all eventually hit the ground, by the way.
Right, all of them. But he even could throw a sinker. Honest to God, and all you guys could. But the bottom line is somebody just got to show you how to hold the ball. And for Bob to say that, I know what he's talking about. But the bottom,
they didn't call it a four, you didn't call it a four-seam fastball.
Yes, we did.
Freehand,
oh, yeah.
Freehand
yeah, we
didn't
did.
Come out to the mound and say, let's get this guy with a two-seam fastball.
Yeah, we did.
Right.
Yeah, when you wanted a double play, you wanted,
you called
you wanted
it
to
that,
throw
it. Two-seam fastball. Did you call it
a
that?
Sinker. Yeah, you called it yeah, a sinker, right?
Yeah, that would be a sinker.
That's my point. It was just a sinker.
It's a terminology, though.
They throw a two-seam fastball now.
Well, that's what it is, a two-seam fastball.
I know,
four-seam,
Danny,
Bob,
I understand.
And then there's a pitch with no seams at all. You grab the ball without any seams, and that's a tough pitch. I mean, it's tough to control for anybody.
This is like saying they used to call it speed. Now they call it velocity.
Right. Yep. Oh, yeah,
they
all
used
the
to
terms.
Call it, they used to call it a pick. Now it's a ball screen. It's the same yeah. damn thing.
Hey,
disabled list.
Hey, guys.
let me inject one more thought for you. The World Series rings they gave out yesterday in Boston or on opening day, they finally opened up in Boston the other day, had 185 total stones in the ring. It takes 5 people to lift the ring.
and lastly, before we go, because we're running out of time, I want to mention a major story this week. It became a major story. And this is the Bleacher Report expose on the battle and the hatred between Aaron Rodgers and former Green Bay Packers coach.
Oh, yeah. Great story.
You know, I started to read that story, and of course, Rodgers went nuts. He says, this reporter is just trying to get publicity for himself. There's so many falsehoods in here and stuff. Mike and I battled like anybody would battle in a situation like that, like Brady and Belichick have had their battles. I started to read that story. I got about 6 graphs in, and I thought to myself, this is ridiculous. It's just I didn't like the tone. I didn't like some of the stuff he was already writing about. I thought, that's not right.
So it was just a hit
that's
job.
That's not right. I might have to take, although I'm sure they didn't get along. I think this was Much Ado About Nothing, as Billy Shakespeare used to say a long time ago.
Much Ado About Nothing. Go ahead, a biblical quote in that so far. Lastly, unless somebody wants to throw something else in, and our young friend Andy says, please let the show run long. But, I was at the Masters last year, and another thing I didn't see on Sunday, because I was at the Masters, and you can't see anything except an occasional shot.
Well, if you weren't only 5'5", you'd have seen a lot
more.
And
not only that, not only can you only see 1/36 of the course, but if you want to go a different hole, you got to try and find it, walk around, and by the time you get there to find a place to stand.
If you weren't so cheap, you'd have bought a card when you walked in and got all your information.
Miserable experience.
You could have gone anywhere you wanted to go.
Miserable experience. But anyway, I also didn't realize that Patrick Reed, who won, has been stalked by his family. Now, you know, when he got married in 2012, his parents advised him not to marry Justine. He has not talked to them since.
And?
He has not seen his – they have not seen his children. They are attending – they even went to the Ryder Cup, and they stand behind the green, and he sees them, and it's kind of like they were kicked off the grounds once, allegedly.
That's like Aaron Rodgers' relationship with his family. He's got the same relationship with his family.
Just very –
not stalking.
Very, very strange. You don't know who's right, who's wrong.
So what happened here? They're divorced, obviously?
No. He's estranged from his parents because they wouldn't approve of his marriage in 2012 to his beloved wife, Justine. They're still together. Yeah. They have two children, and her brother is his caddy. But the parents have started going to tournaments without any credentials from him or tickets from him, and they're watching him play, and it freaks him out. And he had them removed once from a tournament a year ago or so, allegedly for making threatening moves towards his wife.
I got
so
his
very,
answer.
Very, very strange.
I got his answer. He needs to see a psych.
Yes, he does.
He really does. And he's got a deep, deep problem.
Need to see a psychologist. It sounds like the parents have the problem.
Well, maybe the parents.
One more thing
Wait a minute. Maybe the parents just want to see their son play golf.
That's right. That's right.
I think it's that simple.
It could be.
But he's got a problem of some
kind. The parents,
kind.
You know Eli just said.
I like that.
Totally
I agree with him.
Disapproved of his marriage.
So
totally
it's not their position
to
disapprove.
Time out. Now, we don't know that he was 22 years old. They thought he was too young to get married. And a lot of parents would say the same thing.
My mother said I was too young when I was 18 and got married.
And my mother said, when are you going to get married already? You're in your 30s.
Where are the grandchildren? Oi. Now just
oi.
Oi. One other thing about this. If you want to stalk Patrick Reed, for his family, that's the easiest thing in the world. You just camp out at the nearest Burger King. He'll be in there sooner or later, I guarantee you, and wait for him.
You mean with his trailer?
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you again on the next edition of No Filter Sports.
And we got a beauty for you next week, folks.